אתם עם SBS בעברית.
The 2026 Adelaide Writers Festival was cancelled following a week-long firestorm that saw board resignations, mass author boycotts, and a national debate over limits of artistic freedom. At the center of it all was the disinvitation of Palestinian Australian author Dr. Randa Abdel Fattah, a decision made by the board citing cultural sensitivities after the mass shooting at a Hanukkah party in Bondi in December. Today, to continue the discussion, we hear from two distinguished figures who watched the collapse from different vantage points. Noy Harsel's an academic at the Australian Centre for Jewish Civilisation who has substantial executive experience in the arts institutions in Victoria. And we've also got Joshua Dabblestein, a prominent Australian writer and journalist whose commentary is published in all major Australian mastheads, including the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age, The Australian Financial Review, as well as The Australian. First up, I speak to Noy Harsel. As mentioned earlier, Noy's a senior policymaker at MIRA, the Monash Initiative for Rapid Research into Anti-Semitism at Monash University in Melbourne. She's got both arts industry experience as well as an academic experience, which is her primary focus right now, and she's been observing this very public meltdown of the Adelaide Writers' Festival with an experienced analytical eye.
It sort of feels to me that arts and politics have been so entwined, right, for the whole time, really, quite a long time, almost the whole 2.5 years since October 7. So for me, it feels almost like we're re-engaging in a conversation that you and I probably have had over and over and over again. This whole thing with the Adelaide Writers' Festival is a culmination of a number of high-profile events that have come up recently. And what it really has shown is that I see it as yet another, I guess, avoidable disaster in a series of huge escalation of events that talk about this cancellation culture that we're having at the moment here in Australia, which feels like we're looking at the way that we look at our arts as a way of almost a binary opposition, so that we are kind of looking at the way that we cancel out people, cancel out our creatives if they don't agree with the way that we want to talk about Australia, our culture, our arts programming. And then what we end up doing in that is we almost create more opposition, and we almost look at that as if it's in itself its own moral achievement. I guess what I also sort of want to clarify in that there's not a part of me when I'm saying that looks at the cancelization of Dr. Randa Abdel Fattah's appearance at Adelaide Writers' Festival and that cancelization. I'm not trying to condone or suggest that what she had or had previously said is in any way defensible, or there weren't things that she was saying that were wrong or didn't deserve to be interrogated. But I guess my concern here is that the people that when we go so quickly to cancel or boycott, there's a whole series of repercussions that happen as a result of that. There are lists that are drawn out. There's a groundswell of canceling and counter-cancelization, and people feel like they have somehow won in this. And what ends up happening is there's also this opportunity where people who are not part of that movement of boycotting can also feel that they are then being intimidated or they're excluded as well. And this just doesn't necessarily create this moment of cultural clarity or support any notion of social cohesion. And none of this at all helps anything around anti-Semitism, because all we end up seeing is we divide something into a right and a wrong, or something that's worthy or unworthy, an enemy or an ally. And all of this just works contrary to what we're trying to achieve in the arts.
Noy's answer got me thinking about the notion of cancelling people. Is it a worthy pursuit or not? Is this absolutist action right or wrong? Do we cut people off from freedom of speech and original expression in order to be what some would call virtuous or puritanical? Does this mechanism actually help or hinder thorny and very uncomfortable subjects, such as the one we're tackling now, that is anti-Semitism, racism, and freedom of speech.
This notion of cancelling, or the way that we've sort of used cancelization as a groundswell movement, where that it's become this huge notion of righteousness and the culture of intimidation that sort of followed up behind it, really what it does is it doesn't really do anything that serves to feed the support of the arts, doesn't serve to feed the support of Australia as a multicultural society, and it does nothing but does nothing to mitigate anti-Semitism. So it does nothing to do anything that we hope or suppose or say from any side of the argument of what we want it to do. You know, really, unfortunately for Jewish creatives, what it ends up doing is it really seems to serve or feed into a lot of those sort of anti-Semitic tropes about power, control, conspiracy theories. And, you know, you can often what we've been noticing is a lot of surges in anti-Semitic social media feeds and comments, which just make all of this even much worse.
In an attempt to stamp out the zero-sum game of cancellation, which Noy alludes to, I asked what her solution was if Dr. Abd El Fattah wasn't disinvited from the festival, then what? How else is the festival going to keep the environment fair, balanced, and even inviting?
I guess the question is, well, what happens if we interrogate the comments? What happens if we allow the debate to continue? What happens if we are holding people accountable for what they say? Because on the flip side of all of this, when we look at what happens in boycott culture or cancelization culture, when a whole bunch of Jewish creatives, for example, were boycotted, you know, doxxed, were cancelled, notwithstanding their political views on Israel, there was not the same groundswell of support within the arts for them. Right, there was not the same resistance or support or backlash against institutions, organizations, or festivals for these Jewish creatives who are being cancelled or boycotted or doxxed. So the question asks, who are we supporting? Are we supporting this justice for everybody, or are we only supporting this sort of notion of free speech for some? So if we're supporting this free speech for everybody, then we need to be able to support this concept of civic debate for everybody and allow everyone to be able to have this concept of clarity and allow this complexity to happen. And we shouldn't be celebrating public punishment. We shouldn't be celebrating this notion of some people are with us and some people are against us, because what it ends up doing is it really polarizes our society further, and it doesn't help the Jewish creatives, and it doesn't help our creative society at all.
For Joshua Dabbelstein, the board's initial decision to disinvite Abd El Fattah wasn't just about sensitivities. It was about a long overdue recognition of how certain language can impact the safety of a community.
Well, originally it was a little bit of a relief in a way. It kind of felt as though for the first time in years there was some institutional recognition that there is a correlation between incitement and actual violence. And, you know, I use the word incitement liberally here to be completely fair to everybody involved. By incitement, what I mean is calling to globalize the intifada or even posing questions around certain groups' safety. And then, of course, as we've seen, you know, the vilification and violence that the Jewish community have experienced kind of feels inextricably linked to so much of that rhetoric.
Dabbelstein argues that the controversy highlights a deeper historical issue regarding how Jewish identity is constructed and attacked in modern political discourse.
The truth is that the Zionist in Australian discourse is actually a libelous construct. The Jew is associated with genocide, apartheid, colonialism, fascism, and any other libelous word that has been attached to it. And these are not new things. These are not things that have happened in the last couple of years. These libels are really just a new modern incarnation of the same kinds of anti-Semitic libels that we saw, only they're not traditionally anti-Semitic.
I asked Dabbleshteyn whether having Jewish representatives engaged in a civilised debate with Dr. Randa Abdel-Fattah was a smart way of maintaining freedom of speech, or if it was futile considering the loaded language she has historically and repeatedly used towards Zionists.
When you enter into a conversation as an avowed anti-Zionist, proclaiming that Zionists should not even have cultural safety, I mean, it doesn't really suggest as though an open conversation on stage is really going to help anyone or even maybe be possible. I think the other thing is that these types of comments have been made by somebody and ascended to by most people around her. So we have to think about the room. We have to think about a room that is full of people who don't seem to know the difference between anti-Zionism or elimination of Israel and criticism of Israel. So within that room, within that space, I feel as though it would be very, very difficult to host somebody who might be able to be heard or even to be given the safety that his interlocutor has tried to deny.
I prompt Dabbleshteyn with the recent polls results on how many Australian Jews are Zionists. The polls' estimates are conservative against others, with Gen 17 Community Survey finding somewhere between 69% and 77% of Australian Jewish people believing in the State of Israel and its fundamental right as their homeland. So then I ask, what is it that Australians and the wider community are not understanding vis-a-vis Jewish people's attachment to the land of Israel?
I mean, it's such a fascinating question. And I think, you know, when we start to learn about Indigenous peoples from all over the world, to expect that the entire culture, spirituality, history, connection to country could be boiled down to a soundbite would be considered absurd. And yet in this country, we seem to give Jews the opportunity, you know, in 20 to 30 seconds or less, to explain why Jews might have a connection to a space that they are from. So I would boil it down to something as simple as possible, which is definitely unsatisfactory, but it's the best I can do. Jewish people are routinely referred to by politicians and in the media as people of the Jewish faith. This is absurd, right? Judaism is a part of being Jewish. But Jewishness is a culture, it's an ethnicity. Judaism can be a religion. And there are so many moving parts to this group of people because we are ancient. We predate our common understandings of statehood, common understandings of religion, common understandings of even ethnicity. So I think that to try to explain to Australia the relationship between Jews and Israel would really be to kind of shortchange the entire Jewish experience if it was only done, you know, kind of in reactions to persecution all the time. The truth is that Australians just don't really come into contact with Jews. There are 0.4% of the Australian population are Jewish, which means that I think each one of us would have to have 250 conversations each with non-Jewish Australians, and we would have to nail those conversations in order to get the message across that we are more than simply a people with some parochial attachment to a bit of land in the Levant. We're more than a people who, you know, are just a religion. We're more than a people who were simply boiled down to a blood quantum and gassed. We are multitudes, and you know, it's very difficult to explain that in such a short space of time. But ultimately, the Jewish connection to Israel is a story of survival that's lasted thousands of years. And we need to think about what happened on the first night of Hanukkah last year. Now, on 25 Kislev, which is a Jewish month, 2,000 years ago, just over 2,000 years ago, is when the story of Hanukkah began. Judah Maccabee managed to liberate the Second Temple from overtaking Seleucid Greeks. They lit a candle. It was supposed to only last a day. There wasn't enough oil. The temple had been desecrated. Jews had been pushed out. And somehow, miraculously, this candle burned for over a week. And every single year, Jews celebrate that. And they share it with their kids, who share it with their kids, who share it with their kids. Language has tied us together intergenerationally. not just in terms of that miracle, but in terms of connection to that country and that space and inhabiting an understanding that no matter who squashes us, we are okay, we're going to be okay, and they can't push us out. And I feel as though this new wave of expecting Jews to somehow remove thousands of years of connection to country because of geopolitical struggles is so tone-deaf and so bigoted.
The fallout from these conflicting viewpoints was swift. Director Louise Adler resigned in protest, calling the board's decision a harbinger of a less free nation. Within days, a new board was appointed, issuing an unreserved apology to Dr. Abdel Fattah and retracted the claim that her presence was culturally insensitive. Whilst the 2026 festival remained cancelled, the invitation for her return in 2027 stands as a symbol of the board's reversal. But the rift remains. On one side, a demand for absolute artistic freedom and the right to provocatively critique. On the other, a plea for institutions to consider the weight of rhetoric in a polarised society. As Adelaide prepares for a return to the gardens in 2027, the ghosts of the 2026 saga linger. Joshua Dabbelstein reminds us of the link between words and physical safety, whilst Noy Harsel warns us that our cancellation culture is an avoidable disaster that leaves everyone silenced. This is Marielle Olensky reporting for SBS.
עקבו אחרינו והפיצו אותנו דרך דף הפייסבוק שלנו.